Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
This is my kind of town. Chicago is my kind of town. Chicago is my kind of people too. People who smile at you, and each time I roam, Chicago is.
The legendary Mr. Kelly's once graced Chicago's Rush Street and the entire country by launching talent like Barbara Streisand, Woody Allen, Bette Midler, Richard Pryor. Its visionary owners, George and Oscar Marienthal, smashed color and gender barriers to put fresh, irreverent voices in the spotlight and transform entertainment in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Now with the club long gone and its star talent reaching its golden years, George's son David is on a quest to collect the memories of the clubs before they're lost. The list of celebrity interviews includes Lily Tomlin, Woody Allen, Bob Newhart, the Smothers Brothers, Dick Gregory, Dick Cavett, Shecky Green, Robert Klein, Ramsey Lewis, and many others. Joining us to talk about it all is David Marienthal. David, how are you?
Good, Dave. So nice to talk to you.
Thank you. You know, jumping right in, I host the Sinatra Hours every Sunday morning here, and always been fascinated by Sinatra and the time he spent here in Chicago. And besides his dining and drinking establishments and our legendary restaurants, you can't talk about Chicago and Sinatra in the same sentence without talking about Mr. Kelly's.
Well, we have that great connection with Sinatra through Tom Dreesen, who was at Mr. Kelly's many times.
Yeah, absolutely.
With his partner, Tim Reed.
Yeah, Tim and Tom.
Of course, he opened for many a star, Sarah Vaughan and many others. So it was great to have him be part of the documentary. He's a great connection tonight. Obviously, Don Rickles was great to hear of that era.
Yeah.
And then Herb Alpert, which performed at my father's other club, the London House. It was one of my father's favorites.
Is that right? Oh, man. I'll tell you, I'm sure you do too, David, but you know, my dad had those vinyl albums, and you know, we would throw it on the record player and listen to Herb's classics, and that was the thing in the 60s and early 70s. You know, this was your dad's and uncle's place, correct?
That's correct. They opened it as the Fort Dearborn Grill, which is right across from the Wrigley Building, right at the nexus of Chicago, and then turned that into the London House, famous for classic jazz and great steaks. And then a few years later, went into the Rush Street, the uncharted territory of the seamy side of town on Rush Street, and opened Mr. Kelly's, which became the creme de la creme of the Rush Street scene.
And what's funny, I didn't know they owned all three. I knew about Mr. Kelly's. I knew about London House. I didn't really know the connection. But your dad, your uncle, you know, for decades, they were the it guys in Chicago. I mean, that was pretty far on top.
Yeah, that was really when, you know, local celebrity met everything. And we'd have Oscar Peterson come over to the house and play the piano. Barbara Streisand was one of my uncle's favorite, and he brought her in from New York as a young woman. Bette Midler, they discovered right out of the bathhouses, and so it was just a cavalcade of stars and celebrities.
Well, and you talked about, you know, Mr. Kelly's of course is the centerpiece of this documentary. And you know, I wondered, okay, where did Mr. Kelly's come from? Where did that name come from? That was named after the first manager of the place. So who was Pat Kelly?
Well, Pat Kelly was the first maitre d', their manager that they hired, and he didn't work out, but they loved the name. So what's more fitting than two Jewish brothers naming their club Mr. Kelly's in Chicago?
Yeah, and I mean, Mr. Kelly's is where Gibson's is now on Rush, and they pay tribute to Mr. Kelly's, and that's kind of where I've gotten my background on it. Up and down the stairwell, there's just hundreds and hundreds of pictures of the legacy of that famous space?
Well, actually, Steve Lombardo, who we know and love, actually bought Mr. Kelly's in 1975, and he bought it so much on the spur of the moment that he had to tell Gino Vannelli not to come into work that week, and then he turned it into Sweetwater. So he has a real fondness, and he's been a real supporter of the project.
That's great. You were some of the names. Let's talk about some of those names that were at center stage at Mr. Kelly's, because when I look at this list, it's just incredible that these names all walked through the door and hit the stage there.
Well, the interesting thing is that they were of all colors, all ethnics, all different types of people, and that was one thing that Kelly's was known for. Not only to bring in new cutting edge entertainment, but also to one of the first clubs in Chicago to welcome an integrated audience.
Well, and, talking about Lenny Bruce, Flip Wilson, Bill Cosby, George Carlin, Richard Pryor. I mean, these are this is top notch comedy. Jackie Mason, Eartha Kitt, Joan Rivers, Mike Nichols, Aretha Franklin, Liza Minnelli, Bob Newhart, and then a lot of established stars too. This wasn't just a place to be discovered, like Ella Fitzgerald, the Kingston Trio, Peggy Lee, Lena Horne, Billie Holiday. They all headlined at this club too.
Well, and over 36 albums were cut at the clubs, and it was known for the recordings. Woody Allen cut his first album there. Ella Fitzgerald cut an epic album there in 1958. Billie Holiday was recorded there. Sarah Vaughan, two albums. And it was part. So Lenny Bruce, as was part of the free speech movement in America. Lily Tomlin was there protesting a law that prohibited single women from sitting at a bar. And so it definitely highlighted the women's movement, the free speech movement. Dick Gregory being one of the first African-American comics to break the color barrier in Chicago. And so this was all how Kelly's walked this fine line between, catering to business people and more conservative, but also having, the young people in there and the beatniks and, really willing to take a risk with groundbreaking entertainers.
We talk about all the albums that were recorded there in the 1950s on what's NBC5 now, WNBQ. They featured a color television show, which in the 50s, that was rare itself, but it was entitled Here's Music at London House and Mr. Kelly's. And although I don't think the show was actually recorded there, but the set made you feel like it.
Well, it's so great that you remember that, Dave, because yes, we know about this and we've gotten reference to it. And they actually recreated the scene at Mr. Kelly's in the studio. And but unfortunately, all that footage has been long gone, as far as we can figure out. Anyway,
I know
we've been working on finding any traces of it for the last 5 years.
Well, as you mentioned that, I chair the Broadcast Museum in town, and we have a lot of Chicago footage. I'll talk to our folks and see if there's anything that they have on this. Might as well take a peek.
Yeah, they've been very helpful, and we've resourced the Museum of Broadcasting, the Chicago Film Archives, Media Burn, right. Chicago History Museum, and now, of course, we're so proud to be associated with Newberry Library, who has just accepted this incredible archive of photos, images, and over 100 interviews. We have interviews not only with the celebrities, we have interviews with the bartenders, the hat check girls, the doormen, waiters, Jay Emmerich, who owned all the bars across the street. So we have this rich archive that now Newberry Library is curating. And they're going to be presenting a full-scale exhibit in a couple of years.
Well, I love hearing that because, it's great to hear from the celebrities and their experience. But for the people that worked there and were there every day, that has got to be, there's got to be some great stories. And you yourself, as a kid, you got to hang out a little bit at these clubs. What do you remember yourself?
Well, we'd go down to the London House, which was a little bit more family-oriented, every Sunday. And my mom would dress us up and we'd sit right in the front row and watch Oscar Peterson, watch Errol Garner, George Shearing. They all come over to the house, these great jazz pianists.
Wow.
And then occasionally they'd get us over to the Mr. Kelly. So I was honored to see Barbara Streisand when I was 12 years old.
Wow.
And she walked onto the stage, and she was a pretty unassuming-looking young woman at that age. And when she opened her mouth, though, you really knew you were in the presence of a genius.
We're talking to David Marienthal about Mr. Kelly's, and he has a new documentary in the works, and we're going to talk about that next here on 720 WGN.
While I'm alone and blue as can be, dream a little dream of me. Stars fading, but I linger on, dear, still craving your kiss. I'm longing to linger till dawn, dear, just saying this. Sweet dreams till sunbeams find you. Sweet dreams that leave all worries behind you.
State Flyer on 720 WGN. We're talking to David Marienthal. He has a new documentary in the works about Mr. Kelly's famed Chicago establishment. David, tell me, like, when you decided to finally, like, really do some research, do these interviews, and put together a documentary. Long time coming.
It really was about 6 or 7 years ago, and we'd always talked about doing something, a coffee table book, or, you know, memorizing these clubs somehow, but none of the family had really moved forward, and it was really, tell you the truth, after my mom passed away about 8 years ago, and then some other family friends who worked with my father and knew my father passed away, and I just thought that, you know, this was all going to be lost unless somebody did something, and I was probably the best one to try and pull it off.
Gotcha. So what has this process been like? Where did you even start, David? You know, I'm sure there was some family items that you had of your dad's, but, like, how did you start digging into this? I mean, was it really talking to other people?
We had some family stuff, but very little, actually. When my father died in 1972, he had kind of merged his business with another corporation, and so a lot of the stuff got left there, and then when it was closed in 74, a lot of it, you know, just kind of got lost. So we really had to start from scratch in some ways, and I started by going over to our Chicago institution, the Story Corps, and interviewing the friend of my father's, Herb Gordon, who went with him to explore the bathhouses to bring in Bette Midler. And we went over the Story Corps, and then I talked to my uncle and recorded him, who worked as a manager for my father. I got in touch with a manager that really ran the places, Bert Lieberman, down in Florida, and got him. And I was just doing it really by the seat of my pants. And it was really, I guess, when Bob Newhart and his manager picked up the phone right away and invited me to Beverly Hills to get an interview with him, and then when Marty Ehrlichman, the original manager for Barbara Streisand, picked up the phone and invited us to the concert at United Center and treated us so well and offered to contribute to the documentary, I knew I had something that, you know, the public needed to see.
Well, speaking of Bob, you know, 1959, I know Mr. Kelly's instituted a entertainment policy which combined music with comedy, which was great, and that was the club's format, really, for the next 16 years after that. And one of those performers was Bob. And I know you're talking about Jerry Digney. And they were, you know, his star rose so quickly in Chicago. But Mr. Kelly's was a centerpiece of where he was able to introduce himself to America.
Yeah, he really told a story about how he tested all his material for his albums at Mr. Kelly's. It had never been heard.
That's wild. That's wild. And you said you talked to Tommy Dreesen, too. Now, you know, he was there.
Tommy Dreesen has been great, and he helped us do the trailer.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that really appreciates every part of his journey. And he talks about Mr. Kelly's all the time.
Well, we were so lucky to partner with Loyola University as well. We had their master's in history classes, going out and interviewing, doing these firsthand oral history with all these jazz sidemen and musicians and employees. And so that was really, really a big boost when I started to, you know, feel that this was really history and it needed to be recorded and brought into the 21st century.
You mentioned Bob, you mentioned Tommy Dreesen. Talk to me about some of the other folks you interviewed.
Well, Lainey Kazan was really great. The funny story about her, I did get a chance to do the lights and the sound at Mr. Kelly's one year, one summer after high school. And, of course, Lainey Kazan was there. I don't know if you remember her, but she was a bombshell. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I had the biggest crush on her and just would have all this dreams about her taking me on the road with her. And she didn't agree to that, but when I did when I did get in touch with her over the last few years, she was very warm and gracious, and we had lunch with her, and then she did some great recordings. She was there when the place burned to the ground. And she was on stage singing "Smoke Gets in Your Eyes" when the smoke started drifting across the room. And then my father brought her back a year later to reopen the new place.
Wow. And then you talked to the Smothers Brothers too?
Actually, Tommy was one of my first interviews. I had a friend that was a neighbor of his up in Northern California, and he invited me to his home there, and he just really, you know, shared what a important place it was. They drove cross country in their station wagon. Wow. To perform at Mr. Kelly's.
Wow.
And it was their big breakthrough. And then Dickie was great too. He's a big part of the documentary. And they, you know, they really, and it, of course, as a kid, they were some of my favorites too. They'd come over to the house and just entertain us. And they both loved to play with the kids more than hang out with the adults.
That's great. And it was all about the albums back then too. I mean, it was all about cutting new material to put it out for the public. Now, what is it going to take to get the documentary completed and ready to be seen? I mean, this is a project, and, you know, you do look for funding in projects like this. So talk a little bit about that.
Well, we are, we're almost there. The film is 99% complete.
Great.
We do have plans to show it on WTTW. So we are looking particularly for companies or groups that would like to sponsor that and have their message as part of that broadcast on May 27th. And so that's really where our fundraising efforts are going at this point, is to just, you know, being able to get it out to the public on broadcast TV. We're also going to be airing it nationally later in the year, and whether that's on video on demand, we're still, you know, mapping out our distribution strategy for that.
So to make donations to the project and for more information, and it's really just a great website that really does help tell the story and it gets you excited about the documentary, you got to visit Mr. Kelly's, and that's spelling out Mr. Kelly's, K-E-L-L-Y-S, Chicago.com. David, a great pleasure. When the film is ready to go, let's come back and have another conversation.
It's so great to see a fan like you, Dave, and say hi to Herb for me.
I will. I will.
It's a great show. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you, my friend. All right, take care. All right, let's see here. Top stories from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom will be coming up next here on 720 WGN.